Sacred land, it has seen many hands, it has wealth and gold, yet it is fragile and old, and now the greedy souls just don't care to know all the changes it will confront. So speak out loud of the things you are proud, and if you love this coast, then keep it clean as it holds, cause the way that it shines may just dwindle with time, with the changes it will.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Michael Oppenheimer, the Albert G. Milbank Professor of Geosciences and International Affairs in the Woodrow Wilson School and the Department of Geosciences at Princeton University. Previously, he spent over 2 decades with the Environmental Defense Fund and was a longtime participant in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2007. Additionally, he's the winner of the 2010 Heinz Award, a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and the co-author of the 1990 book Dead Heat, The Race Against the Greenhouse Effect. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Oppenheimer.
Glad to be with you.
And it seems to me that we're losing the race against the greenhouse effect. I just spoke with somebody who took a cruise up to Alaska, and the glaciers, Glacier Bay, when Vancouver discovered it, he didn't discover the bay because it was full of ice. And now you go 80 miles in and you see the ice melting. It's a stark reality, but it seems to me that there's still this wall of denial that's going on.
Indeed, there's no question that Earth is warming and that the signal, as scientists like to say it, is becoming more and more obvious. It's most obvious in the icy parts of the world. Arctic sea ice is shrinking in summer. Glaciers are melting worldwide. Parts of the Antarctic and Greenland ice sheets are disappearing. But we see the changes down here at the mid-latitudes as well. And the U.S., of course, this week and last was in the grips of a very widespread heat wave. And the probability of that kind of event has already increased markedly due to the buildup of the greenhouse gases. And in fact, in the U.S., there's been many more record high temperatures set than record low temperatures in recent times. And in a world that wasn't warming, one would expect about a balance between those two. So there's no question the climate is headed in a dangerous direction.
Well, Michael Oppenheimer, it always bothers me that the weathermen on television, who are most people's access to this basic information about the weather, they sensationalize things. And every time it rains out here in California, they call it Storm Watch 2012 with a big drum roll, you know, and then we're lucky to get a few drops of rain. But the long and the short of it is that I wonder whether there's any way to educate the weathermen about global warming and start putting this stuff in context. Just sensationalism on a daily basis doesn't deal with the fact that I understand that just in this year alone, there have been 96 weather records broken.
Well, there are, in fact, a number of television weather people who do a very good job, and in fact do a good job on this particular question. And you have to understand that most of them are not experts in the climate, even if they know weather patterns rather well in many cases. And there have been many attempts over the years to bring together the professional community of TV weathermen with the professional community of climatologists who know quite a bit about global warming. And that's a conversation that needs to be stepped up, and there are efforts afoot to do so. I think over time that's a very important community, and your idea that they need to be engaged constructively in educating the public on this issue is absolutely correct.
So let's talk then about, Michael Oppenheimer, about the connections between the wildfires in the West and the record heat in the East and, of course, the enormous discomfort by the grid being down because of violent storms. I mean, just on that issue alone, one wonders about the kind of national security impact of this. You know, it seems like the weather is going to be doing more damage to the United States than any terrorist could dream of.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but it's certainly true that there is an economic cost to this problem, which has been ignored by and large by our policymakers in Washington.
So tell us about then the connections that...
Sure. What global warming does is it shifts the likelihoods of extreme events happening. So as time goes on, it becomes more and more likely that a heat wave that might have been very rare in the past all of a sudden starts happening more and more frequently. The frequency, the intensity, the geographic spread of events like the one we saw this week simply become more and more likely, so that a given event might have occurred once every 20 years previously, and in the future it might occur every other year or every year. An intense rainstorm of the type that might have occurred every 20 years might occur every 5 years in the future. A flood which might be produced by a coastal storm, which in the past might have occurred every 100 years due to sea level rise and intensification of the storm, might in the future occur every couple of years. And when you start adding up the impact of these events, including impact on human life, because after all, heat waves kill, one sees that there's a tremendous cost to the increase in these sorts of events. And again, global warming is kind of unnoticeable in the sense of the average temperature increasing a little bit, and it doesn't sound impressive. We're talking about Earth having warmed about a degree Fahrenheit so far, a little more. And over the century, warming something like 3, 4, 5 degrees Fahrenheit. But when you start looking at the effect on the extreme events, that's where you really see it. And more and more extremes will occur more and more often. And that's really where the damage is, the damage to society, the damage to human life.
And my understanding is that on the eastern seaboard, the ocean level has risen 3 inches. It's apparently more impacted on the eastern seaboard than it is on the west.
Well, in the last century, the global average sea level has risen about 7 inches. In the northeast, it's risen roughly twice that fast, and that's due to a combination of factors that have to do with both the local geology and the changes in ocean circulation that occur with the warming. And we foresee that sort of trend continuing, and the trouble with dealing with that is it's a latent effect. That is, a lot of sea level rise has already been built into the system by the greenhouse gases already in the atmosphere, and much of that has not manifested itself yet, and it's effectively irreversible. And the nasty thing about this problem is the lifetimes of the gases are so long that once they're emitted, they're going to be affecting the climate, not just for decades, but for centuries or even millennia. So decisions we make today on what to do about limiting the gases, or decisions we make to forego limiting the gases that are causing the problem, really have an effect down the generations. So we have a responsibility to do something about that before things get out of control.
Again, I'm speaking with Michael Oppenheimer, who is Professor of Geosciences and International Affairs at the Woodrow Wilson School and the Department of Geosciences at Princeton University. He previously spent 2 decades with the Environmental Defense Fund and was a longtime participant in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2007. And just in terms of putting some context to the record heat in the east and the fires in the west, apparently there have been 3,215 daily high temperature records set in the month of June. And since January the 1st, the United States has set more than 40,000 hot temperature records. So do you think we'll reach a point now where, when this kind of information is reported, that it would be reported in the context of saying, you know, this kind of catastrophic weather brought to you by Shell, BP, and Chevron and Exxon?
Well, I don't want to predict what the media would do, and it's proven to be a little difficult to keep the media's and the public's attention on this issue, partly because the fact that the worst of it is manifest in extreme events, and extreme events themselves are episodes which don't happen every day. people, you know, their attention span is shorter. They have things that are more immediate, for instance, unemployment, health care costs, the cost of college tuition, you can name it. It's a long list. So that it's hard to keep this issue on the front burner. Nevertheless, I think over time, the damages that accrue will become so obvious that, people will finally decide that something serious has to be done about it. And in fact, a lot is being done. It's just not nearly enough to meet the challenge. The U.S. Emissions have not increased. They stopped increasing some years ago and have basically decreased. And that has to do with a number of factors like high energy prices. It has a little bit to do with policies implemented in Washington, like the higher fuel economy for motor vehicles. And the Obama administration has implemented some additional policies for restricting emissions from power plants. But it's really nowhere near enough. And we're only one country, although the second biggest emitter to China. So we have some substantial leverage on the global system. But this really is not just a national problem, it's a global problem, and all people in all countries need to get together to settle it, and which is one reason I was dismayed the other day at the statement by Rex Tillerson, and this, to bring it back to the question of what the fossil fuel companies are doing, he basically said, well, we'll just adapt to the problem. With the implication that there's no need to reduce emissions. And I think that's kind of an appalling view, which is ignorant of the real difficulties that this problem will bring about and that people just can't so easily adapt. So I think there's a long way to go in public education and engagement on this issue. On the other hand, human race has dealt with big problems, and I think grappling with this one is something that we have the capability to do. We'll just have to reduce our emissions.
Well, Michael Oppenheimer, not only do the oil companies, are they enjoying record profits, they do have enormous political influence. It's pretty clear that President Obama has not been able to get the Republicans to budge on massive subsidies that go to the oil companies who don't need them because they're enjoying record profits. And this money could go to alternative energies that don't create the global warming effect. So when I suggested that would there be a time when the public could make the connection between aberrant weather and the fumes that are coming out of the tailpipe of their cars and the extent to which the oil companies do a lot of greenwashing. They put up ads all the time on television telling us how much they care about the environment, but the enormous amounts of political money that they spend on Washington are designed to either deny global warming or to prevent any meaningful legislative efforts to do something about it.
I do want to add that there are degrees of behavior on this issue, and that some oil companies at some points have at least professed a relatively constructive attitude on the issue. I think rather than dwelling on the way political actors behave in the public arena in such a self-interested way, which is worth noting, we also ought to say that there are solutions to this problem, and that these companies, with their resources, should be leading the way towards solving the problem.
So what's your sense then of how the debate might change so that our awareness on this planet catches up to the extent to which the planet is threatened?
Humans make progress in fits and starts and in peculiar ways. And, there was a piece of legislation which passed the House, which was a comprehensive attempt to deal with the problem during 2009. It didn't make it through the Senate. U.S. policy got gridlocked after that. But nevertheless, there's a lot of progress that's been made at the state level on this issue. And there's been, as I said, some federal regulatory effort because it didn't have to go through the Congress to implement. Some companies are taking measures to become more efficient, mostly for the point of view of saving money. And individuals take steps all the time to reduce their energy use for the sake of not just the environment, but their own personal economy. So there's a lot to work with out there. The problem is that there's been no overall attempt in the United States to bring it all together in a comprehensive solution, the way the Europeans say have implemented the Kyoto Protocol, which is reducing their emissions substantially. So we await the political leadership that will lead us in that direction. There was early in the Obama administration an attempt at that leadership, then they moved on to other problems like health care. And I would hope that in his second term, if he has one, or in the first term of whoever succeeds Mr. Obama, that there is a serious attempt to solve the problem in true national leadership on this.
Well, hasn't there been an example made by the Germans in this, Michael Oppenheimer? Not only have the Germans given up nuclear power, but they are rapidly replacing nuclear power with wind and solar. And they live in a northern climate that doesn't have a lot of sunshine.
Yeah, there's been a lot of progress in Europe, not just Germany, the Netherlands, Denmark, and some of the other countries in the EU have implemented strong policies to induce the development of the implementation of renewable energy. Those are the kinds of policies which, or their analogous policies could be implemented here. State of California is doing a pretty good job of pushing things along. California's always been very high in their energy efficiency, which is good because it cuts emissions. And now with the implementation of the greenhouse gas legislation of a few years ago, the state is again making a move in the direction of slowing the growth in emissions. None of it is quite enough. Emissions don't just have to be stabilized. They have to be sharply reduced. And we're nowhere near getting there anywhere except in the EU. The emissions have started to significantly decrease in some countries. But, you know, the point is we see the ways that it can be done. We know how to do it. This isn't a mystery. It's not going to bankrupt the economies. In fact, if we can move through the fossil fuel era, we'll all be better off for a variety of reasons. Get rid of air pollution, get rid of dependence on imported energy, reduce our political dependence on countries abroad that we'd rather not have a political entanglement with. For all those reasons, it would be a good thing to start that transition sooner than later. We know how to do it, and when the political will gets together, I think it could happen rather quickly.
So in the meantime, how does one deal with, for example, John Christie at the University of Alabama in Huntsville, who's a global warming skeptic? He's suggesting that the fires and the record heat and floods, et cetera, that are happening with greater frequency, his answer is, the guilty party, in my view, is Mother Nature.
Well, everybody's entitled to their view. He just happens to be wrong in this case. And the preponderance of the scientific evidence and the preponderance of scientific opinion at this point is that the frequency, intensity, and extent of these sorts of extreme events is increasing due to the buildup of the greenhouse gases. You can't, in the case of any one event, you in general can't point to that event and say this was caused by the greenhouse effect. But you can say that events like this are increasing in their strength due to the buildup of greenhouse gases with a very high likelihood, particularly for heat waves. And everything that follows from heat waves, including people dying of heat stress and forests exploding into flames. So I think the argument is settled, and we need to move beyond those contrarian views to try to figure out how to get the political will together to solve the problem.
Well, just in closing, my understanding, when you talk about Mother Nature being at fault, it seems to me that Mother Nature, in fact, has built in a warning system that it means that if we don't address it, it exponentially gets worse, because as the ice cap melts, the less heat is reflected from the planet because the dark ocean it replaces the white reflective ice cap. And unless, for example, we paint all of our roofs and our roads white, We have to find some way to reflect that sun back. And my understanding is when the tundra melts, it's just built in that as more global warming happens, that nature will, by its nature, accelerate the process. Is that right?
What you're talking about are so-called positive feedback.
That's right, yeah.
There are many of them, and we believe that on the whole they are stronger than the so-called negative feedbacks, which tend to have the opposite effect and tend to stabilize the system. So on the whole, it does look like as we warm the Earth, we'll accelerate the warming because more warming will beget more warming. That's one reason why it's critically important to try to act now rather than later. Because it looks like as we pour more heat into the system, the responses will get larger and larger proportionally.
Well, that's dire enough, I would think, people to recognize that we're running out of time here. And it's kind of difficult to look at your kids today and think about the kind of world that they could have unless we deal with this.
Well, that's right, and I'm a parent and I feel the same thing. On the other hand, I am also aware, I'm not a pessimist, because I'm aware that the human race has both created for itself many challenges and faced them down many times. And the human enterprise continues in some ways to thrive. So I don't give up hope at all, and I think it's a matter of focusing the collective mind and doing what we know how to do. And I am confident we will do so.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Michael Oppenheimer.
It's been a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Michael Oppenheimer, who's the Albert G. Milbank Professor of Geosciences and International Affairs in the Woodrow Wilson School and the Department of Geosciences at Princeton University. Previously spent over two decades with the Environmental Defense Fund and was a longtime participant in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2007. And he is the co-author of the 1990 book, Dead Heat, The Race Against the Greenhouse Effect. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back and go to Salt Lake City to talk with a Mormon liberal.